Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Worldwide. Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 708. This is your host, Danny. And joining me this week, co-host of the show, we have Pete.
Good morning, everyone. What up?
Yo, man, what's up with you, man? Paris this week.
Yeah, no Paris this week. Paris is in Arizona watching the getting ready to watch the Bucks Cardinals game. That's later this afternoon. So
cool. Shout out to Paris. Shout out to everybody that's watching us on Twitch and also listening to the podcast worldwide, man. So we have a lot of cool content for the show. We have couple reviews. One of them, of course, is The Evil Within, which I just finished it last night. Oh my God, Pete, that game is serious. I love horror games, man. So I'm dying for Pete to play this. I really want you to play it, Pete, because you're not a huge fan of horror games, right?
It depends on the game. Like Dead Space, I loved. Games like, what was the first one on the 360?
Was it Anna Wake? Anna Wake is not a horror. That's more suspenseful.
More suspense. What was the one for
Fear?
Xbox 360?
Fear?
Condemned.
That was a good one.
Condemned Origins. That was a phenomenal game. That game was,
yeah, that was
so
really good. Really, really good.
Fear was okay, but for me it was more of like an action shooter. It's closer to like Dead Space than anything else. We'll see. I mean, when I saw the announcement for The Evil Within 2, just prior to E3, I think that was one of my predictions that came true. And yeah, man, it'll be interesting to see how they bring that whole game back. And I know you beat it, so
yeah, it's just good. But you check out the review later. You guys are gonna like it. And also, I have to mention this because I saw this online, and yo, Pete, I'm so hyped for this game, man. I'm very hyped for Super Mario Odyssey. Last week, Paris said that this could be a game of the year contender. And I agree with him. I'm like, yeah, it's going to happen. I think so too. You know, I think this has been one of the best years for Nintendo in a very, very long time. You know, and they've been doing a great job, even better than Sony and Microsoft this year alone. You know, with just year one, right? So I've read that Edge magazine, a very well-known magazine, have given this game a perfect review, 10 out of 10. Remember this, only 20 games has received a perfect score from this magazine. Two this year, one has been Zelda, and now Mario. Two Nintendo games, first-party games, getting a perfect score. So the magazine, I believe, they already announced it. It's all over Twitter. It's all over like different forums and stuff like that, man. So, man, I think Nintendo is going to dominate this holiday season, man. Dominate this holiday season for sure.
Yeah, they put the cover out on Twitter. It's at issue 312 or something like that. It comes out for the month of December. Game of the year. Yep. You got Mario in a white top hat. Or all white.
It's a cool cover.
All white pimp suit. With the top hat. It's Nintendo, and it's their flagship IP, right? Yes, Zelda is up there, and you know all the other ones, but when you think Nintendo, you think one character only, and that's Mario. And it does not surprise me, considering how well and how long that they've taken on this. We saw it at E3. It looked and played amazing. It kind of brought back that old school feel while still bringing it for 2017, right? I'm not surprised. Yep. This is the type of game that would make me, you know, contemplate. I mean, hell, I was at Best Buy the other day and I walked through the Nintendo aisle and almost got excited when I saw a box on the shelf and it was actually like a case for it. And I was like, and my son looks at me, he's like, were you about to like pick up a Switch? And I just looked at him. I was like, hey, stranger things have happened. So
yeah, that is true.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but here's the thing. When was the last time have you heard of a company releasing first party games throughout in the year that two first party games, contenders of gold, game of the year? I have never seen that.
A couple of years ago with Last of Us and Uncharted 3, maybe?
Well, no, wait. That was not in year one. In year one?
Does it matter what year it comes out?
No, I'm talking about in 1 year, Pete. Like a company usually, when they have when a company has like one big game, they release it that year.
I want to say Sony's got that. I want to say Sony has that as well. Hey, put the sword and shield down, bro. Put the sword and shield down.
Serious.
Don't be so quick to dismiss, though.
No, I'm serious. Like I've been thinking about this now for two days now. I'm like, wait a minute. When was the last time? I've never seen that with Microsoft. I've never seen that with Nintendo. This is the first time from Nintendo. I've never seen that from PlayStation. They always will have one big game that year, and they will go all out with that game. But two big games in 1 year. Remember, too, Zelda originally was supposed to come out a while ago, and it just got delayed. So it helped them. Like the timing was perfect because Nintendo promoted Zelda like crazy for the launch of the Switch, and now for the holidays they have Mario, and it's two games in the same year. That's big, I think.
I don't know. Something is telling me that we're missing something here, because I want to say like a Last of Us and a game of and a God of War or something like that both got. Now, how many have you seen that get released that get 10 out of 10? If that's your quantifier, then very, very rarely, right? But if you're just saying two games that have potential to be considered game of the year, I would say Sony within the last couple of years.
I know. If any listeners out there, please let me know if there's any games that has gotten like great reviews. They both came out the same year and they both got game of the year contenders from first party wise, not third party. First party from Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony. Let us know, because right now I can't think of any. So I'm just want to say that.
Send us your feedback or questions. Yep. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so let's start with this, Pete. It's time for fan mail.
Yep. Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right, so we have voicemails, we have emails, we also have Discord questions too.
Oh, watch out.
So, a couple of people already sent us through SpeakPipe, through voicemails, you know, they call our number and everything. So anybody listening, make sure to continue to send us questions, because we could start doing this a lot more, creating fan mail episodes, and it's all up to you. So the more questions you send, the more content we have and the more stuff we could talk about, man. So, all right. All right, so Pete, we have a couple of voicemails. Let's start with that first, with one of the voicemails.
Okay,
you want to go with that?
Sure.
What's up, Gamertag Radio? This is Vaughn from Virginia Beach calling you back once again. Just thought of two quick things and a question I wanted to call you guys back about. The SNES Classic, just wanted to give a quick story about my experience. I went out at midnight to Walmart, was number 16 in line. They ran out at number 14. Left disappointed. But the next morning, got up, went to Target at 6 a.m., got one for my wife, and then ended up going to GameStop at 10 a.m., was first in line, walked in and got one there. So I was able to get two, one for me and one for my wife. Speaking of old school gaming, picked up Cuphead. I was on the fence, wasn't sure I was going to get it until I heard you guys talking about it. For anybody out there who's thinking about getting it, the game is hard, but it's not impossible. It's one of those things where when you finish a level, you get a sense of accomplishment. So definitely is a great game. I think that'll go down as an underrated game. And then the third and last thing, I have a question for each of you, if you could answer. If you were running, money is not an object, and you were running each of the three companies, Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation, what is the one thing that you would do for each one of those companies to draw more players to your fold or to your company. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great one. Peace.
All right. So that first one was from Vaughn. First and foremost, thank you for sending in your question and your comments. Really appreciate it. So Danny, he wants to know if you could do something, money, not an object, that would return each of those companies and bring them back to a position of power within the gaming industry, what would you do?
All right, so let's go with Nintendo. I'm a huge fan of Nintendo. I think that they need to step up with their online features and everything. I think they got it. It's there for multiplayer. If you want to play with other people, it's there. But it's a lot of things that is missing. I'm not a fan of the Nintendo app, the Nintendo online app. You know, I want them to fix that and also add a feature there where, let's say you pay, let's say, $10 or $20 a month and you get unlimited old school games you could download as long you're a subscriber for that. You know, I like that. So now for PlayStation, they're already on top. So the only thing that I think they should do is, you know, invest the money they've been getting with PSN and invest that on adding more features, better features, and also the sound quality, like voice chat, to fix that online. I'm not a fan of that at all. I think they've gotten a lot better compared to the PlayStation 3, that's for sure. But I know they could do better. They're getting money. Why not invest and make that even better? With Microsoft, I think they should invest on more original exclusive content for first party or exclusives for the consoles. That's what I would do, in my opinion. You, Pete?
So with Nintendo, I would agree to an extent with regards to the with regards to their app and their ability to communicate and stuff like that. I'd say bolster your multiplayer and your online presence with gaming. I know it's not a focus point for them. But I think it's something that I think with as much money as they have and as much innovation as they do, they should be able to do at least to the minimum what the other systems do, right? Second, I would say Nintendo needs to step it up with regards to hardware so that they could support more third-party games. I know that their focus primarily is to, you know, do all of their first-party things, but I think for people who are primarily Nintendo or Switch owners, because I don't think you could do something like play a PUBG or something like that on a DS. But if you're going to bring in a console like the Switch, be a little more innovative with the hardware, or at least bring the hardware up so that other players or other people could play other third-party games on there and not have to make the development process so convoluted, so that, you know, it's a little bit easier across titles. With regards to to Xbox and actually for all three of them in this respect, I would say we need a return to community engagement. That's something that has fallen off. It's starting to come back up. It's starting to swing upwards. But I think, you know, up until a couple of years ago, maybe 2013, et cetera, is when a lot of that started to hit the decline, and it's not as involved as it should or could be. Like I said, it's on its way up. One other thing is I'd love to get rid of the yearly copypasta of game titles, because, you know, this year over year over year of burn, like, you know, no mean to call them out on it, but, you know, there's no need for a yearly Call of Duty with two or three different companies developing for two or three different title iterations or directions for their content. Give me an every other year or every other year plus for games. Make me want more, right? Take more time, iterate more on your game cycle. You know, make it that much better so that I don't have to take, as soon as I download or as soon as I get the disc, I don't have to do a 30 gig update file to fix all the stuff that, you know, that was rushed through because you guys, you know, couldn't project manage, you know, well enough. That's what I would like. I would, you know, so if you ask me, those are my top pain points. And obviously money's not an object, and that's why those games come out quick. But that's what I would do.
Can I say something, Pete?
What?
You were mentioning third party games. Just want to mention that.
It doesn't matter. It's any game. It doesn't matter if it's first, third, or whatever.
I know. I'm just letting you know. All right. You want to play a second question?
No.
Oh wait, we have a Discord question too. Is it Discord questions or let me see?
I don't know. Make up your mind.
All right, this is from Chubby Wubby. He said, "What's up, Gamer Tag Radio Crew? I got a short and simple question. What console do you think will be flying off the shelves this year during Black Friday? I know it's a little early to be thinking about it, but what are your thoughts?" And he's also very curious about this. So I can answer that very, very quickly. I think Nintendo Switch is going to go off shelves this holiday season, big time, especially with that Mario game. Come on, Mario is a very iconic game, man. Everybody knows about Mario. So I think by Nintendo having bundles, special Super Mario Edition, you know, type consoles like that, is going to sell like crazy. And also, again, Super Nintendo Classic, that's going to sell a lot too. And actually, I want to mention that very quick, you know, because I know you guys been mentioning, oh, they should release that for the Switch and all that stuff, which I agree they should. I think Nintendo should do that. But here's the problem with that. If they do release those games on the Nintendo Switch, Nintendo's gonna charge $5-$10 for those games to download, and a lot of people are not gonna pay $300 and then download 20 games each $5-$10 to get those games on the Switch. So why not go with the $80 route? You get two controllers, and it's not $300; it's $80. So just want to mention that real quick. But yeah, Pete, what about you? Who you think? Which company you think is going to sell the most this holiday season?
I mean, I don't know if that was the question. I think console wise, obviously, it's going to be a race between Xbox One X and Nintendo. Xbox One X, just because it's the new hardware piece, right? That's the console that everybody's been anticipating and waiting to get on their shelves. Nintendo's going to sell out because you can't even find it now, right? It's October. You can't even find one now, and it's been out for 6 months. So that's, if you can't find it now, you're definitely not going to find it during the holiday season. God help everybody on, you know, God help all the parents trying to, you know, clamor and fight on eBay, trying to get consoles for their kids for Christmas. I don't know, from that, that's what I got to say. Nintendo's going to sell, I want to say, I think just because of the inventory and all of the 2-3 year lead up to Scorpio/Xbox One X. I'm still going to call it Scorpio because that's the title. That's the name it's going to have for life. I think that number is going to edge them out. I think you're going to see a lot more Xbox One X sales this holiday season than a Nintendo Switch. And that's probably more because Nintendo Switch you can't find now. The question is holiday season, not the year.
No. Holiday season, I will still go with Nintendo more than Xbox.
I don't know. I don't know if they're manufacturing enough to sell.
They are. What I've read that they're now for the holidays and on, they're committed to ship out 1 million or even 2 million units per month. That's from Nintendo's like interviews and stuff like that. So I see that happening. I just honestly, like, yeah, I'm excited for Xbox One X. I just don't see them selling like how you're saying, Pete. I just don't see that.
Why are you being so negative, though, man? Come on. I'm trying to give shine to the Microsoft sword and shield, and you're shooting it down.
No. Now, if you mention Xbox One S, yeah, it's going to sell crazy because it's cheaper. But Xbox One X, it's going to remind me a lot of the PlayStation 4 Pro. Like, is there, the fans are going to buy it. Maybe a couple of people that are curious about the 4K, yeah. But I think overall, PlayStation 4 Slim and also Xbox One S are the ones that are going to be selling the most, more than those, than the other consoles, I think, personally. So, you want to go to the next question, Pete?
What's the next question? Are we going audio, video? Or, I mean,
whatever you want. Surprise me. Whatever you want.
So we're going to go question two.
What up, my Dominican brethren, Danny, salty fellow Paris, and the equalizer, Peter. What's up, y'all? Alex here from New York City. Longtime listener, first time caller. Here with a thought I recently had. And that is, every time I hear Xbox fans speak on games they want to see in the future, they seem to repeat games from the past or something that they've seen on other platforms. For example, we need a Super Smash Bros. Clone with Microsoft mascots. And even the rumored list that quote-unquote leaked had Ninja Gaiden and Dead Rising. Why? Why do we need more of the same? It hasn't even been that long. Sometimes, I think Microsoft has an identity crisis, and re-releasing Voodoo Vince and Phantom Dust shows that. I get that Phil has fond memories of Voodoo Vince, but those titles go over people's heads, man. It's like a company's third console equates to growing pains. And I think Microsoft should just embrace their American roots. And games like Cuphead and Dragon Ball FighterZ are smart because those things are successful in the U.S. Anyway, what do you guys think? Thanks for the many hours of entertainment and keep up the great, awesome work you guys do. Peace.
Let me say this very quick because I know, you know, I know we're having a lot of fun, you know, when people like making fun of us and stuff like that. But I personally think the whole salty Paris thing needs to stop. I think it's getting a little bit out of hand, you know, and I know people are doing it because they feel like, you know, they're part of our friends. Like if, you know, I just feel like personally, I think it needs to stop. And if you're going to send a question or anything, just send a question and go from there. You know what I'm saying? It just personally, I think, am I right, Pete? I think it's getting out of hand.
Yeah, let's just I think it's keep it positive and chill with the name calling and stuff like that. If let's Paris is going to say that he's salty, I think because he's talking about himself, he has a right to say that. But, in regards to describing, you know, some the members of the, you know, whether it's the hosts or moderators or et cetera, let's just keep it positive, let's keep it friendly, and then, you know, we'll just stay focused.
I know a lot of people are doing that because they just like they feel comfortable with us, which I understand. I know that's the reason. They're not doing this like to get Paris pissed or anything like that. But, you know, let's just chill with that, I think, personally. Now, with the what he was saying is I agree with him. Like I would love to see new stuff from not only Microsoft, but from every company. You know, I think that a lot of the companies nowadays are depending so much on just releasing the same type of content every few years. And I understand why. It's a business, it's a very successful game. But why not always also to take a risk and release something that nobody's expecting? I know what is hard to sell is new IPs. New IPs is super hard to sell, you know, but let's do that once in a while, I think. Invest money on that and take a risk. I personally think that that's very, very true.
No, I 100% agree. Kind of brought it up on the last one where they stopped doing the copy pasta of previous game iterations and just rehashing the new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the identity crisis concept where, you know, we need to stop bringing back. There's a market. There is a place for retro or going back to games from history's past that were popular. I mean, not going to lie, it's something like Psychonauts would be phenomenal. But if they could update the camera before they released it, because, you know, the whole you can't look up thing, that just for me was always a little thing that always bothered me, but I loved it. But I think a game like Cuphead, Ori, those are great, phenomenal games, but I don't see them as system sellers. And I don't know if that's, you know, because those are great concepts. Those are a great step forward or a great move forward, but I don't know if those would be considered system sellers. And I think that's something that Microsoft needs to continue to do, is to iterate and get developers that can focus on those first party titles. Why do you think Nintendo's been so strong for so long?
Yeah.
It's because of that. Why do you think PlayStation is so strong now? It's because they've got that library of great, phenomenal first party titles, regardless of whether they're first, third person, you know, if they're shooters or if they're story, they're great first party games, period. And that's the one thing that Microsoft unfortunately has lost the sauce on over the last couple of years, is they relied, I think, so heavily on the Forzas and the Halos, and you know, that they kind of lost their way. And I think I said this, you know, a couple of months ago, is they need to find that thing, that little thing, that one little diamond in the rough that starts them back down the path. And then once they do, they'll just be good, you know, but it's finding that diamond in the rough. PUBG could be that next step forward.
You know what I'm afraid of about that part, Pete, about the whole PUBG? I can imagine next year, all these companies are now going to announce games that's kind of similar to that, like Battle Royale style type thing. Like, it's going to happen. And it's always going to happen. Like,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. 100% agree.
Which, it's a formula because, hey, it's selling. That's the hot thing. Let's try to do similar to the other company that's been successful with that game. Let's try to do that. It's going to happen. But I want to see new, fresh content. It doesn't have to be Battle Royale. Yo, do something that's 100 players, but it's not a shooter. Something totally different.
You know, it's a perfect example was something like Titanfall. It took a shooter game, but flipped it and did something completely new. Okay. Regardless of, like, you know, whether from a performance standpoint or the Microsoft exclusivity at the beginning, et cetera, take those things away. The core concept was super cool. The gameplay was fun. And that's ultimately what you're looking for, right? Marketing strategies aside, et cetera, that's a totally different situation. That's a totally different discussion, release schedules, et cetera. But take a game and flip it. Take the concepts. I mean, you don't have to completely come out 100% original at sometimes. If you can, that's, you know, that's a bonus. You'll always get the thumbs up from me. Cuphead is a great example. Ori is another phenomenal example. Super Lucky's Tale, great example. You're taking platformers or you're taking games and making it new and fresh. I just hope that those are, you know, that we can get more.
All right, let's talk about Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access. Star Trek, one of the most iconic and influential global television franchise, returns 50 years after its first premiere with Star Trek Discovery. The CBS All Access original series features a new ship, new characters, new missions, while embracing the same mythology and hope for the future that inspired a generation of dreamers and doers. Star Trek Discovery is available right now exclusively on CBS All Access. And you can watch all the past episodes on demand. You can use your Xbox One console, Android, iOS. Let's say you have an Apple TV. You could stream this. Not only that, there's a bunch of other shows that you could go there. Like me, I use it all the time. I use it for, like, Big Brother. I watch the live streams of Big Brother. And I could even watch NFL on this, man. So I personally think that CBS All Access is super cool, and it's great to take a break from gaming and do that. So CBS All Access subscribers can watch the epic journey unfold every Sunday across devices. Start your free trial right now, totally free, guys. Go to cbs.com/Star Trek. Once again, if you want to try out not only Star Trek Discovery, but also other shows through CBS All Access, check this out for free. Go to cbs.com/Star Trek. That's cbs.com/Star Trek.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
And now we're going to take a short break from our roundtable discussion, and I'm going to be reviewing two games for this episode. One is South Park, The Fracture Butthole.
Eric, you must listen to me.
Get out of my head, Timmy.
Your franchise is going nowhere. Face the truth, Eric. You guys are kind of douchebags.
He just called us douchebags in my mind.
He did?
South Park, The Fractured Butthole.
Available October 17th.
This game is a role-playing game developed by Ubisoft San Francisco in collaboration with South Park Digital Studios and, of course, published by Ubisoft. So this takes place after the events of South Park, The Stick of Truth. Children of South Park, they become role-playing superheroes. So Cartman was planning a film franchise with his friends. But they were like, no, you know what, Cartman, we don't like this idea. We're going to split. We're going to start our own group. So what happened? There's now two different groups in the game.
Now let's go through the plan one more time. First, we start with a Coon movie. Then we do the Super Craig movie. Then Super Craig and Coon will join forces in the Human Kite movie just as we start ramping up Kenny's Netflix series.
How come I have to have the Netflix series? I want a movie too.
You have a movie, Mysterion. You're in the third Coon and Friends United movie after your Netflix series.
Yeah, but he's saying he doesn't ever get his own movie.
Do I get my own movie? Not everyone gets their own movie.
The franchise plan sucks. If we want to make billions of dollars, then I think we should start with a Tupperware movie.
Right, start with a black superhero.
Marvel is making a black superhero movie.
Yeah, now! They waited years to get to that. We follow their plan. We do all the real people first, and we sneak the black guy in phase three.
How about we just do movies starring all of us, like all the time? But then we're just rehashing the same old material.
There's nothing wrong with doing the exact same movie to start a franchise.
Okay, J.J. Abrams.
Okay, oh, okay, so you're on Cartman's side?
He just likes this plan because he gets two movies in phase one.
Guys, we have to just go with this plan. We don't even have one movie yet.
How did it get to this? How did we grow so far apart?
You go with the plan. Maybe we'll just go and do our own franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you want Civil War? Is that what you want? Yeah, dude, Civil War. You. You get out of my house.
We'll make way more money on our franchise.
Go ahead. I bet you don't even get halfway through phase one on your franchise, DC Comics.
It reminds me of kind of like, you know, like the Avengers, Civil War, that type of vibe. So you, the player, are going to control the new kid. That's his name in the whole game. You could customize it, create it. Create however you want it. You could also change the difficulty in the game and so on. Now, you also have choices on what type of powers you want, what is like your weakness, and so on. And I do like this game because it reminds me a lot of, you know, this is more of like the turn-based RPG, of course, but it reminds me of a lot of like Final Fantasy III. You have to do certain things with like your controls, and so on, to use like superpowers and stuff. I love South Park, you know, but there's some jokes that's kind of like, I'm not really, it's kind of weird, you know. I get really uncomfortable, you know, with some of their jokes and stuff. But besides all that stuff, I think the game itself is just a lot of fun to play. And it could get, you know, some parts it could get a little bit challenging and stuff. You have to make sure who is going to be part of your group, because some of the characters, they're really good at they have different powers that others don't have. So like, let's say Cartman, he's really good at attacking the enemy scratches, you know, with his character, right? Which also will allow the enemy to bleed. So if the enemy has like a lot of life and you hit them and you also make them bleed while they're taking turns, they also will drain their health. And it's a lot easier for you to continue to attack and then eventually you will beat that character. All right, some of the characters that are also part of your team could help you heal and so on. And like I said, it reminds me a lot of like those old school turn-based RPGs like Final Fantasy and so on. So it's a lot of fun. You know, now I've been playing this now for a very long time now and for almost a week. So you will get a phone, right? With this phone, you could download like apps and stuff, and you could also check like the maps. And it's exactly like an iPhone. And there's like an Instagram in there. You could check, change your costumes. You can select your power, preview your attacks through there. Also, when you go to the maps, you will get to see all the town. Oh, I have to say this, in the beginning of the game, there's some parts in the town that is not accessible because you have to finish some of the missions, and then it will unlock, or you will get some different powers that will allow you to go to like different areas in the game. There's a lot of puzzles. There's, of course, like I mentioned, combat, which is very, very important. That's like the thing that I love the most about the game. It's just the combat. But puzzles, some puzzles, you have to use like either some of your powers, some of the powers of your characters that you find too. So there's items all over the place that you will see and you're like, man, I want to get that. But the thing is, if you haven't unlocked or find that character that will help you to get that to that item, you can't reach it. You can't get it. So, but there is some parts in the game that you could use your own power to get those secret items and stuff, which also is going to help you to either upgrade your character, or it will help you in the different missions or side missions. So, you know, in Final Fantasy, when you're playing that game and you're walking around, the enemy could find you and they could attack first, right? Or you could also go behind from the enemy and you attack them. So it's similar like this with this game. What you have to do is when you see like an enemy, you could throw an item to them while you're walking around the town in South Park. So when you see an enemy, you throw an item at them and then you go towards them and hit them, and then it will go back to the turn-based gameplay. And from there, you could attack first. like I said, this game is a lot of fun. If you're a fan of the first one, I think this one is like a little bit better game-wise than the first one. And it also has like a different combat and gameplay than the first game and stuff. So yeah, give it a try. I mean, you're a fan of South Park. This is a great RPG game. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. Like I said, yeah, there's some jokes. It's kind of weird and it's kind of, it's South Park. You know, it could be very, very controversial and stuff. But overall, just besides all that stuff, put that everything on the side. This game is a lot of fun. And I'm going to continue playing this, man, until I completely get 100% of this game. But it's a lot of fun. Definitely. Worth a try. Give it a try.
Eric, you must listen to me.
Get out of my head, Timmy.
Your franchise is going nowhere. Face the truth, Eric. You guys are kind of douchebags.
He just called us douchebags, in my mind.
He did?
Southpaw, the fractured, but home.
Available October 17th.
Back on the scene. This is Gamer Tag Radio.
All right, so we're still in San Francisco here.
Yep.
This is a bonus extra content for those who listen to the podcast.
Yes.
We just finished recording our Twitch recording.
Yep.
But if you listen to the podcast, this is extra content for you guys. But
sure.
I want to have a conversation with Pete about Steep coming up.
Road to the Olympics. Steep. Yeah.
Yes.
From Ubisoft. Yes. Yes.
We definitely got to talk about that, man.
Talk to me.
So let's talk about it. Like, before we talk about the interview, I know we already played it on a podcast and everything, but we have to talk about our experience playing the game because it's been a year since we played Steep. Now, we're fans of SXX, huge fan, and I think the last game that got released for the current consoles for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, I wasn't too impressed.
It didn't live up to the hype of the previous. Obviously, Tricky is the goat.
Yes.
When you're talking about extreme ice sports or snow sports or extreme winter events, so Steep kind of brings that back from the history books, and that's one of the things that I was anticipating and looking forward to playing back at E3 2016, and I'm glad that Ubisoft has decided to not, you know, let that title just go off into the sunset. It was one of those titles that they released. It had, you know, moderate success, but they didn't give up on it. You know, it was one of those titles that they were like, you know what? We see that there's a void in the marketplace for a game like this, so let's just continue to release content for it. And they've done an amazing job at supporting the title. You know, they've done multiple, updates, downloadable content in the form of additional game types, updates to the game itself, content creation tools to empower other people to take, you know, a content creation perspective, you know, video of their runs through, whether it be slalom or, you know, when they're running in the paragliding or snowboarding, etc. I'm digging it, and I'm not just trying to blow smoke, thank you for them, you know, flying us out here and you know, giving us an opportunity to check out the game. But it's a fun game, you know, and it's,
dude, we had a blast. No,
I know you were.
I was more of the racing guy. You were more about the tricks part of it.
Right, right.
So now before we mention anything like that, they also mentioned to us that they're also working on a single player story mode.
Right.
That wasn't available for the first official game.
Correct. Right.
So they're adding this for this. Plus, if you want to do like what we were doing today, racing, snowboarding.
And on top of that, if you want to go you just want to explore the countryside.
Japan.
You know, Japan.
Yeah.
You know, traversing the mountainside with the cherry blossoms all over the place, or, you know, they really took into account geography and some of the more common themes mm-hmm. within, whether it be Korea or Japan. I took, you know, being of Asian descent, I really appreciated the fact that they took that and said, you know what, let's take this, you know, that let's take something that is commonplace mm-hmm. to Japan or commonplace to Korea and or the Asian, you know, the Pan-Asian area, and let's run with that. So that was something that, you know, being half Korean, you know, I took, you know, pleasure in saying, okay, wow, they really took the time out to say let's do this because it's authentic to the region and locale. Let me tell you, I spent way more time than I should have on snowboarding and freestyle and whatnot. It was for me personally, that was the most enjoyable part. I know you spent a lot more time on the slalom portion because you're the racer. You want to thank you for the rice burner in the background. You took a lot of energy towards the slalom courses and the racing component. Mm-hmm. Did you spend time on the pack?
No, the reason why was because I'm a racing guy. Like I love,
but there's racing.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like I love
time trial using the jumpsuit, trying to go through the track. So.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like with me, I'm a racing person, so I was trying to beat my score. My goal was to get gold. There was one race that I think I was down by 2 seconds, and I got bronze. So I was like, you know what? This is a challenge. And I kept on going. Then I upgraded to silver, but I was down again by 2 seconds for gold. So I was focusing on that. Yeah, I did other events, you know, doing tricks and stuff like snowboarding.
So was it more the regular slalom or the giant slalom?
Both. Okay. I did both. Okay. I got three bronze at first.
Consistency.
Then I kept on going. Then I got two silver, one bronze. The third bronze was pretty hard to get silver. So one of the silvers, I got close. Pete, when I say close, I'm talking about 2 seconds again.
Wow.
For gold. So I was like, there's no way for me to get gold with this. But I know if I would have kept on going and learning the tricks and the turns and all that stuff, I think I've gotten the gold. The thing is, remember, we'll go to an event, it's timed. You have a certain amount of time to play the game. Then we do the interview. Mm-hmm. They go back. By the time we come back, we really don't have enough time to actually finish. But I think the amount that we played, I was happy with it. Like, we played steep last year.
Right.
For a while. And then I think the time that that game came out, there was so many other games coming out, too, Games of War and other things, Forza Horizon 3, and I think it was other ones from PlayStation.
It was one of my guilty pleasures that I would just sit back when I was kind of bored or I didn't know what to play. It was one of those games that I enjoyed playing just for the sake of playing. I've always had the appreciation for a winter extreme sports type game, and I really like what Ubisoft has. Coming for us, shout out to, you know, Ubisoft Annecy. They're the French team that are essentially outside of Nice in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's something that we have talked about in the past, where literally the mountains of France is outside of the windows of the development studio at Annecy. And that's something that they see on a daily basis, one of their inspirations towards the game. So,
but even in the mountains in Japan is totally different than the mountains that we played before, even the original game.
Yes, because the island is such a volatile island, the mountainscape is a little more jagged and aggressive than what is seen, whether it be in the standard game or in, like, let's say the Korean islands in this example for Road to the Olympics. So there, it's not as high speed, because
it's more jumps. Like the things that they had there, it will make you jump higher.
It was
do a lot of tricks and stuff.
It was more of a, and I hate to sound cliche, but it was more of a steep angle, because it was more, you know, it was a harder angle to traverse, as opposed to the Korean mountaintops. There was a lot more dense vegetation, as well as, you know, whether it be rocks and whatnot. And it was more indicative of the Japanese island versus the peninsula of Korea.
What are your thoughts about doing tricks in the game? It took me some time for me to actually remember, because it's been so long to play Steep, because it's been over a year. So your thoughts about playing this game and getting used to doing tricks in the competitions, in the events?
I didn't have that much of an issue because I've played games in the past, like SSX Tricky, Dave Mira, BMX, things like that, where, you know, it's more of a timed, you have to time your jump and your rotation and your flips.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. So from my personal perspective, I wasn't, it took maybe a few, you know, one or two runs to get back into the flow of how to, you know, use the right stick to slow down, as opposed to using using your left stick to slow down, so it doesn't affect your overall experience in the game. One of the things that I noticed was if you use your right stick and come to a complete stop, your run ends. So you're no longer able to compete and go for the gold medal, you know, the gold, silver, bronze, whether it be in the event or in the actual Olympiad event. So that's one thing you have to be very cognizant. The racing, the slalom races, you have to be very subtle with your maneuvers, as opposed to hard jerking left or to the right with a control stick, because then you could either go, you know, hard drift or go out of the turn or go out of the lane. And so you have to be cautious, and you have to be kind of, you know, controlled with your movements.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I mean, kudos, and they're still working on the game, obviously.
Yeah,
so
you could tell they're still working on that. I mean, what was the type of the events that you felt like it's really difficult? It was really hard.
For me, was the slalom. That was the one thing that you were keying on. Because you'll notice on the game screen, and I actually spoke to one of the people from the development team, we were talking about feedback, was there's no mini map on the screen whatsoever for what direction you need to go to. You know, it's, you're going basically off of muscle memory of the repetition of going through these maps. You go through the first instance, you get the hang of what you're doing. You go through the second run through that same slalom run, and you're like, okay, well, I know I have to go left, left, right, left, left on this one track. And then it's more of an exercise of practice, of going through the motions of, okay, I know when I'm doing this slalom run, I know this is the path I need to take. How do I do that path in the most economic method while still maintaining speed and forward motion? Whereas it's not as dynamic as trying to do trying to do the tricks or the freestyle. And actually one of the feedbacks that I gave to the developer was maybe offer that in the earlier non-Olympiad events, but taking that away completely from the Olympiad events, or making that as an option for the player to either turn it on or turn it off when you're playing, you know, the practice rounds or the lead up to the Olympiad events. But once you get to the Olympiads, you take it out completely, so that it's more of a, you know, a practice of repetition versus, you know, just following the map on the screen.
I know it was very challenging because we were playing for a very long time. I was focused, like, I want to try to get silver, even gold. So far, I got one bronze, two silvers. And there was other ones that was, like, close enough.
Any gold?
Huh?
Any gold?
No.
fail.
For you?
Two golds and a silver.
Two golds and a silver?
But again, I was doing freestyle. I was doing the freestyle. I was snowboarding.
I was more of the racing,
going for the tricks and the points versus trying to do the race and the solid.
I was more about doing a race, get some medals. I wasn't thinking about goals. I wasn't thinking about like how many points or anything like that. I went to, for those who don't know, we played also the Japan Mountains. It's freaking hard.
They do it with a much deeper powder on the snow. So as opposed to doing it in more denser snow where you're literally gliding off the top, when you're playing on more powdery snow, you sink a little bit. So you're not as fast. And that's more of a, you know, that's more indicative of the temperate and the overall climate of the, you know, the island of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, just I had a blast regardless of both. Again, like we said earlier, it's, you know, it's more indicative of the island and the climate itself. So, you know, you're more steeper inclines. You've got more rocks and more hazards on the tracks themselves. You've got the cherry blossoms, you know, in Japan. So that leads more towards the more scenic environments. It's fun, man.
I mean, do you see yourself challenging yourself and playing this once the game releases and the update releases?
It's more of a fun, you know, departure from the normal. You know, when you want to get away from, you know,
first person shooters,
whether it be the grind of the Destinies or, you know, jumping into you know, whether it be PUBG or any of the other games, or, you know, spending time on Ark, you know, Evolution or what have you. It's a welcome departure because it's more of a repetition based, you know, okay, I did my run. How can I make it better? How can I make this run cleaner, you know, quicker going through the flags on slalom, or, you know, how can I do the freestyle jumps or the half pipes or the big jumps? You know, how do I improve over practice as opposed to jumping into, you know, those random event experiences of, you know, the shooters?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, anything else you want to say? I mean, I had a blast.
Are you going to be playing it? Because
you know what? I think it's good for us to take a break from those first-person shooters and try something new. Like, I played Steep last year, right? But I think when the game came out, there was a lot of other type of different games that came out around that time.
Okay.
That, yeah, I played Steep, but I wasn't really deep playing with it, like playing the game. Started playing, you know, Destiny, Taken King, I think, came out that time. There was other ones too, Forza Horizon 3, which I freaking love. But I think, like, this update, it's a lot better than the original game. They learned a lot from their mistakes. A lot of things they were, I feel like there was maybe modes that were missing. They added it for this update.
Yeah, I don't know if there was mistakes. I just think that, in my personal opinion, there was opportunities missed.
I agree with that.
Whether it be from the original four game modes,
yes,
to the changes that they've added, whether it be from different game modes, different sport or modality types, and then obviously the changes and updates to the content creation process,
and even the story mode,
adding what a story mode.
It looks freaking cool. I mean, I know they didn't really want to talk to the public, but to us, journalists and media, whatever you want to call it, like, I was like, okay, this is cool. It wasn't in the original game. And for them to add this version, you know what? Yeah, I have a lot of other things I could do on the side.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, first-person single-player game, hey, I want to take a break from that. Yo, work on the single-player. And I think it's good. Well, for the price, now the game is cheaper. You could buy that and plus add the update. Yo, you could have a lot of other content.
So there. I have it on PlayStation 4.
I have it on Xbox.
Okay, so one of us needs to get it on the other console, and I'm gonna put it on you. I'm gonna challenge you.
Okay.
To an overall Steep competition.
Oh, what?
Whether it's I don't care if it's just an amalgamation of all the game types, but I'm challenging you so that it's going to be Pete versus Danny in Steep Road to the Olympics.
Any other listeners too? But it's only a place.
Right now, I'm challenging you. But okay. Yes, we can bring them in later on. But right now, initially, I'm challenging you.
Okay.
Me and you in whether, you know, in all of the competencies. So not just slalom, not just giant slalom, but the freestyles and the jets and the bodysuits or whatever, the wingsuits and stuff like that.
That's,
you
know, right.
Me and you, let's do it. I challenge
let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I'm down. Honestly, Pete, the amount of time that we had, I had a blast. It wasn't one of those, like, look, we've been to a lot of media events. It wasn't one of those, like, I'm kind of bored. No. I had fun from the beginning all the way to the end. That even stopped us from playing.
Yeah.
Because we were like, you were focused on your thing. I was focused on my thing. And we had fun at the end of the day, man.
Yep.
It was a lot of fun. So I can imagine taking a break from first person shooters, taking a break from Battlegrounds, Destiny.
It's going to be hard.
Call of Duty. Or whatever it is that's coming out of that time. Mm-hmm. Playing it on the side. Yo, I think it was fun. I think it's worth...
It's a welcome respite from the normal gameplays of the things that we're doing.
I think, for those who are listening to this, let us know. Download it. You could definitely buy this game for cheap, digital, or even you go to the store, Best Buy, and all the other game stores. No? Okay. Just buy it. I think it's worth it, yo. It's worth it. Sorry. I have a lot of drinks. It's worth it. It's worth it, I think, personally. If you're a fan of SXX, which, yeah, I felt like they gave up on that. Yo, try this, man. You know, so anything else, Pete, before we wrap it up?
That's it.
All right, so we're out.
Send us your feedback or questions. Yep. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Once again, we're going to take a short break from our roundtable discussion. Make sure to continue to send us questions, comments, and feedback. If you want to be part of Fan Mail, this is your opportunity to shine on the podcast. Even the new listeners, don't be shy. Send in your questions. We love hearing from you. Doesn't matter from where part of, if you're from around the world, just send it in. You know, you can go to speakpipe.com/gamertagradio, or you could give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Or keep it simple. You want to send us a question via email, send us an email, fanmail@gamertagradio.com. That's fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Take advantage, because right now there's a lot of people wondering what game they should buy, or even questions about the industry. Right now, the holidays, it's going to be really a busy time for all of us, man. So take advantage. Send these questions that we're going to talk about on the show. Now, the next game that I'm going to be reviewing is, oh my God, I'm a fan of horror games. And when Bethesda sent me this game, I was like, okay. I wasn't too hype. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't too hype. They sent me The Evil Within 2. And boy, I have a lot of things to say about this game.
Sebastian, for 3 years since Beacon happened, you've been searching for answers. You didn't find what you were looking for because they didn't want you to. Mobius knows you've been following us. And they've been watching you for a long time. You trained and trusted me. And in return, I betrayed you. Long before we met, you lost your daughter, Lily. She's still alive. This is your chance to save her. To get back what you lost. Lily needs you. You're gonna need to go back into STEM. Again.
This is from Tango Gameworks and is available right now for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. So this game takes place 3 years after the last game. And it's a character. His name is Sebastian Castellanos. And now Sebastian's mission is very personal. He's searching for his daughter, Lily. He thought that he lost her a long, long time ago. And now it's time for race against time as the world crumbles around him. And when I say crumbles, it gets pretty crazy.
That psycho is still on the loose in here.
And he's got Lily.
This chase has been entertaining. But even the greatest entertainments must come to an end.
Enough art school bullshit. Where is she?
We have the same goal, Sebastian. We can help each other. Join me.
So now Sebastian must rescue Lily before everything falls apart and they are both lost in STEM. So this game reminds me a lot. It has like a style of like a little bit of Resident Evil. I could put in a little bit of the Layers of Fear and other horror games. And this game came out Friday the 13th, which was a perfect time for this. Because look, in October, it's all about Halloween, scary games, horror movies and all that. And I love that. So yeah, this is a survival horror game. And like I said, it has a mix of all those games in the past that came out. And I played a little bit of the first game, but something about it wasn't there. Like I really didn't really enjoy it. But this one, I've been playing it for hours and hours, and I'm almost done with the game. But let me tell you, it's a great game to check out. I think that they did a really great job with the story. You really get into it. And not only that, you could easily do other things too while you're working on the main story campaign and stuff. You could do like little side missions and stuff, which also helps you to unlock new weapons, new items, and things that's going to help you. And it's going to be a little bit easier for you to finish up these main missions. Like I said, this game is very, very difficult. And I've been trying to, you know, I got it really, really far on normal. And I decided to lower down the difficulties because I really want to know more about the story. And then once I finish it, I could go back, redo the hard, normal, all that stuff. One part of the game that I really didn't like, there's one mission that you have to wear this mask and it turns, instead of a third person view, it goes first person. And I just didn't really like that part at all, man. I think it was horrible, like the controls. Camera was kind of weird. I think this game plays best when it's third person, but I really didn't like that part at all. I'm not going to mention any spoilers, what part in the game, but yeah, I just didn't really like that at all. Like I said, the story is very, very interesting from start to finish. I'm almost towards the end of the game, and I think this is a game that if you're really into like survival horror, you know, if you really enjoy like games like Resident Evil, stuff like that, or the game like Fear, you should definitely try this out. I was streaming this online on Twitch a couple of days ago, and there was even people saying like, wow, this is kind of like similar to Uncharted, like, but with a little bit of Resident Evil in there, but it's really cool. There's a lot of puzzles in the game too. And yeah, there's the enemies, man. The more you go further in the game, they always introduce new enemies that aren't in this game, and some of them are really challenging and stuff and so on. And it's very important for you to also upgrade your weapons, upgrade your character when it comes to like health and stuff. And the thing that I really truly like about this is the thing that I like about Layers of Fear. When you're walking, the world or the area that you're at is always changing, like maybe like the rooms and stuff, and you turn around, there's like a door there, like, wait a minute, this door wasn't there before, like how this came up. I really like that. It really gets me into the game even more because I love horror games. I love those type of scary games and stuff. So yeah, when you get this, play this game with your lights off. Just do that. And even better, put some headphones, man. Man, let me tell you, having my Lucid Sounds headset, I could hear footsteps. I could hear in the background, like this weird sound that you know that the enemy is very, very close. And I was like just quiet the whole time, like concentrating, like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Because this game, when you play it, it could get really random, man. Like, when I mean like enemies popping out of nowhere, the sound, like, it's very, very scary and it's so much fun to play, man. Really enjoy this game. If you have an opportunity to try this game out, doesn't matter for which console, cop it, buy it, give it a chance, because this is awesome. I think they did a great, great job with this game.
Are you all right?
Why wouldn't I be all right?
Back on the scene. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, thank you for listening to my reviews. Wow, I've been busy. But let's go now. Let's continue with our roundtable discussion. And once again, thank you for fan mail. All these questions, keep it up. Send it in. Woof. Remember, watch us live on Twitch. Go to twitch.tv/gamertagradio. We record every Sunday morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Wednesday nights, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hey, you want to read a question? Email?
All right. So this next question, actually, this is perfect for you, and I wish Paris was here to answer, because, you know, now that he's got a Switch as well. Hi, GTR crew. After searching for a clean podcast about gaming a couple years ago, and after unsubscribing to many others for their language, I found your show and have been a dedicated listener ever since. I have a question regarding the Nintendo Switch. Being a solely PC gamer for the last 20 years, I have honed my approach for buying games. The golden rule, be patient. I give all new games at least 6 months' time to fix all their glitches, frame rate issues, and random garbage before thinking about a purchase. Now, after 20 years of only PC gaming, I'm considering getting a Switch, but would rather be patient and get a 2.0 system with better battery life, a dock that won't potentially scratch the system, and maybe a voice chat system that doesn't require a computer science degree to make it work. I see how the 3DS is on their latest iteration and wonder if a 2.0 Switch would be coming soon, or will I have to wait years for it if they ever even make a revised version? What would you recommend? P.S. One major reason for wanting a Switch is to maybe get my wife to share my hobby with me with games that are fun for couples, i.e. Snipper Clips and Overcooked. Love the show. Serious Turtle.
All right, but first of all, thank you for sending us a question and thank you for subscribing and listening to the show too. So that means a lot to us, man. So shout out to you. I personally think you should definitely get it, because the two things that I love about the Nintendo Switch is, one, it's portable. You could go out, play. You can't do that with your PC, of course, unless you have a very strong laptop, but still, it's not the same type of experience. Another thing, too, is, yo, you could play this on your living room. You get your friends, your wife, family involved and play together. You can't really do that with the PC. Like, it's a hassle to do that, you know. Now, another thing that I like too is that there's a lot of indie content that I prefer to play on the Switch than on my consoles. And you're probably going to have the same type of feeling too with playing some of those games on the PC or on your Switch. So if you wait, if they are planning to, like, let's say Nintendo is planning to release the 2.0 system, I think it's going to be like maybe in 2 to 3 years, because right now they're making so much money. Like, why are they going to go and start releasing a brand new device right away? They're going to take their time with it, man. I think between 2 or 3 years, that's when they're going to release the next better type system from Nintendo, with Nintendo Switch. So if I was you, buy as soon as possible, man. I think right now that there's so much games independently and also first party, this is the perfect time, man, to get the Switch.
He might not be able to get a Switch until 2019. I mean, at the current rate of sales, I mean, you can hardly find them anyways.
No, I like I said earlier, Nintendo said that they're gonna ship out 2 million units every month.
We'll see. We'll see.
They are. You know why, Pete? Because they did that with Splatoon 2. That month, they shipped out so many units because that game was like everybody was talking about that game, Splatoon 2. And now they're releasing the biggest game of the year, Super Mario Odyssey. You think Nintendo's not going to release and ship out
more units, it will be stupid if they don't, man. You know, they're having a brand new bundle.
I never said that they wouldn't. I'm just saying it's been a chore to locate one over the last 6 months, and it's not going to be any easier, I don't think. I still don't think that it's going to stay on shelves long enough for the random walk-up to be able to just find one like you can do with every other console right now.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. All right. Is there any other emails before we play the voicemail?
Yes, there is.
Keep it up with sending questions. Keep it up.
I have one more question. Here's a question for you guys. I know the adopted mantra of games, games, games is used by the big companies and they deliver. However, this year, Sony, Microsoft, and Ubisoft basically ran videos of games. What I'm trying to say is by removing the onstage speakers and running videos back to back instead, does this even need to be shown live? Just release a playlist on YouTube. In essence, it's the same thing. Thoughts, Adrian Walters.
Adrian, thanks for the email. No, I think by them doing that, something is going to, like, we're going to be missing that buzz, that excitement. It's not the same, man. You know, we've been going to E3 now for so many years, and there was a time that E3, the ESA, they tried to have like E3 a little bit smaller, and we went, and it was like, yeah, it was exciting for us, but the excitement was missing, man. Like, there was no like long lines, there was no people like excited for the games. It was just boring, in my opinion. Don't get me wrong, the game still sold, but I think as an industry, they need to still continue with the press conferences and stuff. You know, with Nintendo, like I love Nintendo, but they need to have something big, like, look, Nintendo World Champion. Imagine just releasing videos of just that type of thing like that and not attend the event. It's ridiculous. They need to have events, man. Press conferences to really excite us, man, as gamers. You know, EA has done it. Microsoft is still doing it. Sony, I think they should change it up this year. I think the whole format of just them showing videos is getting a little bit boring, a little bit repetitive, in my opinion. And like, I felt that previous years was more exciting than the last 2 years of them with their press conference at Sony. Because something is missing. I don't know. The whole just playing videos. I don't know. Yeah, Do you agree with MVP or no?
If we're talking simply just the press conferences, essentially at the end of the day, that's all that really is. If that's what you're talking about, Adrian, then I could understand that. If you're talking just from a press conference perspective, if you're talking from a overall game display, like you're going to the Ubisoft booth, or you go into the Xbox booth, you know, there's hands-on experiences that you can't get anywhere else until the game actually shows up at home. There's something to be said about sitting or standing in line, building up that anticipation. It sucks because standing in line for 2 hours to play a 12-minute demo.
Horrible.
In my personal opinion, it's not worth it. And I'm thankful for the position that we're in, that we're able to go in and set up appointments and get to these events and get to play. And don't get us wrong, there's sometimes a wait period that we have to go through as well. But, you know, kudos to the fans who can sit out there for 4 hours just for a 12-minute demo and then, you know just and then maybe be in line and play three games a day. It takes a certain type of person and a lot of patience to be able to do that. But I have to agree. I don't think going to like the Sony press conference, it's more than just watching a video. Like, the Sony press conference was pretty amazing. The art direction with the first one where you saw the water effects, you won't catch that on a YouTube playlist. There's something to be said about sitting there and watching the whole experience. Like the World War II press, part of the press conference, there were loud explosions. You could feel the heat from the stage pyrotechnics, things like that. During I want to say it was a Winter's End or something like that for Horizon Zero Dawn.
Okay.
Where you had
I remember snow.
The snow falling from the, you wouldn't feel that. You wouldn't catch that excitement if you weren't there. There was just so many things that you know, those little extra things get missed when you're not there, right? Seeing the Porsche for Forza, you know, that was really cool. Seeing a physical Porsche, and it's not the first time that we've seen a car get unveiled at an E3. It's just little things like that. And it's not just that. It's the excitement of the crowd that sweeps around them. You can feel the anticipation and the hype. It's almost palpable in those in those scenarios. So there's a certain, it's as opposed to going to a movie theater and just watching, you know, just watching videos on the screen. It's a little bit different. So I think it needs to stay like that.
I personally think that there's something about getting together with other people at an event that is so powerful that you can't get that if you just stay home and watch it through YouTube. And even when we've done events in the past, Pete, that was like a big highlight for us, man. Getting everybody together at a venue, being part of the same event, dude, that's powerful, man. Same thing when we'll go to a store at midnight, waiting for a game to release. It's so special, man. That's more better than just downloading a game from your favorite gaming store online and you just download digitally. Something about it, man, that I think it's better for us to just continue, get out of the house, and just meet other gamers, man. Be part of different events, man. Because if we just stay home all the time, how are we gonna grow as an industry? Think about it. Just stuck at home, just playing, and that's it. We don't go nowhere.
Just because it says social networking doesn't mean you have to do it only over an online network. You could do it over a personal network.
And I mentioned this many times. There's people that listen to us. They don't have social media. They don't at all. They just listen to us because they just found us on their favorite podcast app. It could be iTunes, it could be Spotify, whatever. But it's not about social media, guys. It's not all about that. Yeah, you trend, but that's a whole audience that just use Twitter. What about those that don't have Twitter? You know, same thing when podcasters, they always talk about iTunes. What about Android users? You can't forget that. So I think we got to get out this whole bubble and just get out of our houses, man, and attend events. It could be Comic-Con, it could be PAX, it could be E3, whatever. Just get out of your house, man. That's all I have to say about that. I had to say that. But it's true. It's true, Pete. Yo, we've been having a blast, Pete, right? Because we attend events. We go to these events, man.
Half of the enjoyment of those events are the interactions with other people versus, you know, yeah, it's great that we get to sit there and sometimes go play video games and experience these things prior to, you know, their actual launch. But half of the time it's our interactions with some of the people, you know, with the people that are there that build and make that much better. That's why when in episodes, like when we've gone to like PAX or whatever, we could do round tables with people that we only interact with online. We get to bring people, you know, like the Monas and the Mays to the studio. We bring Q to the studio. We brought Spawn on Me to the studio. Andrew from Show Radio to the studio.
Twinfinite,
you know, Yami and her team. You don't get to do that on a regular basis. Yeah. Like, okay. So like Yami, we've had on a few times because she lives in Miami, et cetera. But like the Spun on Me's, you know, they're all over the place, you know, Minnesota, Chicago and Portland. You can't do that very often. So when you have those opportunities to interact and bring those other people up, and they've been doing, you know, people like, you know, Spun on Me, they've been doing a phenomenal opportunity, you know, they've been doing phenomenal. You guys check them out if you can. Little things like that, right? And so you don't get that by just being online. You have to go out and meet people, shake hands, kiss the babies, like Paris likes to say.
Yeah, I'm going to mention this because I'm not going to say the full details yet because I already talked to P and Paris about this already. So, you know, we're turning 13 years old next year. That's pretty crazy for a podcast. And and to be successful and still doing this every other week, right? Every week we're releasing two episodes. That's crazy that we're turning 13. So I want to do something special next year. There's a couple of the things that we're working on that I can't really talk about it because it's I think it's going to be big, not only for the show, but for us. It's I can't wait. I can't wait to talk about it in the future. But I really want to have a, which I've been telling P in Paris now for months, I want to have a live podcast with our listeners at a location. I'm still talking to a few people. I think I know where we're going to do it at. And I think it's a perfect time to go to that area too. But we're going to have a live show. And I would love our listeners, doesn't matter where you're from, to try and attend this. I'm going to have this free so people could just go and not only be there and watch us record live, but also meet us in person. I think it would be awesome. You know, we've done events in the past, but we have never done a recording live in front of a studio audience. So I'm excited. I'm going to work on it as much as I can. And I really want to do this, man, because I want this to be something special. It's our 13th anniversary, guys. 13 years, man. 13 years. No, but on the real, I'm going to work on this. And once I get a confirmation on location and everything, I would love to invite our listeners there, man. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not like the first time. It wouldn't be the first time you've done it either. You know, you've done it before. You know,
but not together. That's my goal. I want us together to be there. So.
All right.
Oh, man.
All right, let's get back on the show here.
Yeah. So let's play our last voicemail.
Okay, here we go.
Hey, what's up, Gamer Tag Radio? How you guys feeling? What's going on, Danny, Pete, and Petty? Oh, man, this is Keon calling from Baltimore. I just had a quick question for you guys pertaining to Cuphead. Now, Cuphead to me is a phenomenal game. I've had such a great time with it. One of the most original art styles I have ever seen in a game. And it really made an impact to me personally. But not only to me, because I just found out that Cuphead has sold over 1 million copies. In a 2-week period, 1 million copies. It has gone platinum officially. Now, my question to you guys is, should Microsoft lock up MDHR Studios? Because obviously this game is a success. Most games nowadays, as crazy as it sounds to me, knowing how many units are out there, a lot of games don't break a million. But for this to have been a quote-unquote indie but not indie game, because Microsoft did give them some funding, for it to have done this well, it does show that if you have a great product, it will sell. And we know that Microsoft is somewhat lacking from what we can see on exclusives. So do you think Microsoft needs to lock them up? And what do you think the chances of them locking down this studio would be? We've seen that Moon Studios got locked in with Microsoft with Ori and the Blind Forest. I think Cuphead would be a great addition to that side. So, just wanted to get your opinion on this. Thank you guys so much. I've run on way too long with my message, and you guys take care and have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thoughts? Danny? Keon? Talking about locking down MDHR Studios to a long-term exclusivity agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Before you answer that, because I want to say my question to that. Mm-hmm. Why not look at it from a studio perspective? Does it make sense to tie yourself down to a Microsoft exclusivity? Do we think that MDHR would want to be bought and lose out that opportunity to sell a bigger license to the Sonys and the Nintendos for Cuphead? Granted, I understand why Microsoft would do that, but we need to also consider the inverse is, would MDHR want to lose out on that potential?
First of all, Pete, this is a life exclusive deal for Cuphead, for Microsoft and the studio. They're not releasing this game on PlayStation or Nintendo Switch. I would love to play this on my Nintendo Switch, but it's not gonna happen because they have that deal with them. Second, yeah, I love that they could, you know, be part of Microsoft and have that, you know, that deal with them, to just be part of Xbox and all that stuff. But at the same time, I'm kind of afraid of them doing that because we've seen in the past companies, they purchase a Microsoft purchase a company, it doesn't work out, they'll end it. I just don't like that part. Now, what they could do is have a deal with them and release exclusive content, exclusive games for the Xbox One and PC Windows. I think that would be great. But buying them, I don't know if that's a good idea, man. I think, yeah, at first it looks great, but then once they don't need them anymore, they're going to shut down the studio. It happened with Lionhead Studios. You know, we've seen that with Activision. They purchased, Bizarre Creations. Remember that, Pete? They did Blur. They did a couple of games there. Oh, we don't need them. It's not selling. Shut down. That's the thing that is scary about that part of the business. 100% Why not agree. just do exclusive games for that company? Like Insomniac did that, you know, with Sunset Overdrive for Microsoft. I think that's okay. That, go for it. But actually 100% being part of that company is a little bit risky, man, in my opinion.
Yeah, valid point. Valid point 100%. And that's part of the concern and why I'm, you know, you don't always want to sell you don't want to sell the entire IP or sell, you know, your life's work and just sign over to them. Yes, the immediate financial windfall might be a bonus that you don't, you know, that they may not have had in the past. And at the end of the day, it's a business. And, you know, their goal is to make their products to the point that they can start selling larger scale. But when you have a financial deal like that, there's certain goals and things that you need to hit. Do they want to lose? Again, do they want to lose out on potentially selling the next Cuphead and reaching out to both? You know, you have companies that have stepped out and done their own thing and haven't succeeded as well. And maybe succeeding not as well is maybe the wrong term to use. But like when you look at something like Respawn, they left, they started their own thing when they left Infinity Ward. Have they been as successful as they were when Infinity Ward was the bee's knees with Call of Duties? Have they done as well as they could have?
Not
since
yet.
Since they left.
Not yet, but right. Remember, they're working on a Star Wars game.
Right. So they're getting there. And obviously it's not a day one, you know, immediate flip. You're not always gonna catch that. You're not always gonna catch that comet as it explodes. But when you have that exclusivity, you lose out on the capital side, right? And that's where that's where the question is, and that's when people need to sit down and do the PowerPoint presentation to their stock, you know, to their shareholders, if they're a public company. Does it make sense to sell that exclusivity to Sony or to in this case to Microsoft? Will that overshadow or be more cash than what they could have gotten from an extra licensing deal by selling that to a Sony or to a Nintendo? We're just using the MDHR studio with Cuphead in this example. Does that make sense? And we don't know because we don't have the contract. Obviously, we don't know the numbers on the back end, and if that'll ever get shared, who knows? But that's the thing that these developers need to know before they can do those. Will that windfall, you know, be bigger than what they could have done by selling that license to the Sonys and selling an extra 2, 3, 4, 5 million copies, as opposed to just going with one publisher?
Here, Here's a question for those that are listening to this. Rare Studios. What if they ship out Sea of Thieves and it doesn't sell? Because people are like, you know, it's rare. I'm not going to buy it, whatever. People don't buy it. And it's not successful. The chances are pretty high that Microsoft could easily decide, you know what, let's shut it down. They could easily do that. Easily. So do you think, was it worth it for Microsoft to buy Rare Studios? Think about that. Look at Peter Molyneux. He was part of Lionhead Studios. He started his own thing. Is it successful? Are we even talking about his games now? Like how we used to with Fable and so on? That's what I'm talking about, man. That side of the business is just scary to me. I'm just not a fan of that. It sounds exciting at the moment. Like, wow, they're getting support. But the chances is, let's say it doesn't work out. They shut it down, the studio. And those well-known developers or producers, that they leave the studio and they start doing their own thing. What are the chances of that becoming big? It's rare. It's super rare, man. So I'm just not a fan of that.
Yeah,
personally,
I think we're both talking the same side of the fence here. And you take a big risk. I mean, PUBG is the latest example, right? They signed that exclusivity deal with Microsoft.
See, that makes sense. Like a deal like that, or making a game for that console, for that company.
Right now, it's PC only, but this brings them into the console space because of, you know, the anticipation of something like that hitting consoles. Not to say that they're already talking to Sony, because we've already seen the articles of them potentially talking to Sony about future, you know, development and whatnot for the Sony PlayStation platform. So, and that's only going to bolster them. So, of course, I'm curious if Aaron and them are running back now to the drawing board and be like, okay, well, do we throw more cash at Bluehole? You know what I mean? So, that's when you start to make those questions. And Bluehole is a big enough company that they might be able to say, you know what? Well, thank you for this one now, and you know, we'll move forward with the partnership as needed. But who knows? A lot of things are talked about and agreed upon in those boardrooms that we'll never be privy to, you know. So I just want to see games like Cuphead be able to reach more people. But you know,
I agree too.
I think they've done a phenomenal job with their game. I mean, it's almost more fun watching people fail on that game than it is to play the game, because God knows that difficulty level is the struggle bus personified.
Here's this part, Pete. The studio, they are creative. They created a game that people are going to be talking about this for years, right? They have a deal with Microsoft. Microsoft are the ones that really are marketing this game, promoting this everywhere. They even had an event in LA the day that the game came out, and it was because of Microsoft. Imagine them being independently just depending on the fans to spread the word and promote this. Yo, to become successful like that, it's rare, man. Look at PUBG. That was word of mouth. That was straight up word of mouth of people, man.
But Bluehole, in and of itself... Bluehole already had a level of success with their MMORPG worldwide. This was totally different. So Bluehole by itself already had worldwide success. They had already tasted the juice. They knew. This was just, you know, 2.0, totally different game, and they caught the comet right as it exploded. So that's a different scenario. I don't know if you could use PUBG as the right example for them. They've already been there as a top MMORPG maker.
All right. Well, I'm talking about me, that I really don't know much about Bluehole. You know, just saying like that, man. There's people like me too, man. They be like, what is this? Everybody's playing this on Twitch. It's really popular. What is this? Like, you know. So, all right. Well, let's wrap it up. Head over to GameAttackReader.com. Post your comments and feedback. You could also find us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Make sure to share it. And if you can, if you find us on iTunes, make sure to review us, because the past few people that have been reviewing us, they're mad that we talked about PewDiePie, so they gave us 1 star. Shout out to you guys. Yeah, and that's it. Make sure also to send your questions, feedback, comments. Also, you can watch us live on Twitch every Sunday morning or Wednesday nights. Go to twitch.tv/gamertagradio. All right, until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.